Chapter 8. Coco Love Club, London, England. July 5th, 2017. 1:25 a.m. Shigidi and Noma arrived in a black cab and glided out onto the cold cobblestone streets, strolling past the winding queue of would-be partiers, braving the chill for the promise of excitement. They went right up to the plush, leather-padded entrance that looked like a fleshy orifice. Thick, thumping bass, like the unsteady heartbeat of a decadent god, seeped out from inside, punctuated by an occasional rhythmic chant too dull to hear clearly. Noma looked around, a sparkle developing in her eyes. This was her kind of place. Cave, palace, tent, village square, didn't matter. As long as there was darkness, people, music, intoxicants, and desire, she felt at home. Shigidi was wearing a blue fitted blazer over a white shirt and matching pocket square with trim black pants. The blazer barely contained his arm when he flexed it. His clean-shaven head gleamed when the light from the ubiquitous array of bulbs hit it. Noma had chosen a blue, straight-neck bodycon dress that fit her like a second skin, paired with matching Louboutin shoes. Her hair flowed over her shoulders like silk. They were, as usual, dressed dangerously. Tonight they needed to be. Noma noticed how many looks they drew and held with a kind of visual magnetism as they drifted past the queue. At the entrance, she slipped the burly bouncer 4 50-pound notes and a seductive smile as they made their way in without being stamped or searched. Through a narrow, dark corridor was the main hall, attended by a hostess in a short spandex dress, clipboard in hand. "Reservation?" the hostess asked. Noma held out 2 50-pound notes by way of reply. The hostess took the money, smiled, and stepped to the side. "Welcome to Coco Love." Noma nodded to her, and they pushed through the thick, padded door. It was like entering a fever dream. The music exploded from a faint, consistent thumping into a rhythmic booming. There was movement everywhere, and it was difficult to tell just how big the place was or how many people were there, because of the ceiling-high panels of reflective glass that manipulated and reflected every image they caught. A woman in a leather skirt and fishnet top swept past them, her nipples visible and hard in the air conditioning. Shadowy people shapes gyrated sensually against each other in the dimly lit and least reflected corners of the club. Small groups of 4 to 5 shouted and laughed and swayed in place around tables laden with brightly colored bottles. A train of smiling hostesses in short skirts delivered even more expensive and brightly colored bottles crowned with bright sparklers to an especially large VIP table, one of the few things that was bright enough to see. At the heart of the club, bathed in strobing lights, a large mass of bodies pressed together as they writhed, bent, and twisted on the dance floor, sensations running over, their disparate movements all timed to the afrobeats played by a DJ on an elevated dais near the bar. There, in the club's loudest and busiest corner, where everyone was hustling for the bartender's attention and everything was jouncing to the beat, Noma found the man they were looking for. She could only see him from behind, but his blonde head of short hair stood out in the sea of waist-length weaves, afros, braids, blowouts, buzz cuts, and shaved heads. Besides, her skin had started to tingle the moment she glanced in his direction. The spirit particles that had once been held within her had sent a kind of vibration through her, as though they had sensed the proximity of their previous place, a kind of spirit compass. She thought it was almost funny how even now, after so many years, she was still connected to him, this man she both liked and despised. She nodded in the man's direction and twirled her index finger, giving Shigidi the signal they had agreed upon. And he responded in kind. Then Shigidi circled around a cluster of low, crowded tables to flank the man from the right. He positioned himself at the end of the bar by a bright neon green sign that indicated the restrooms. It was a good vantage point. From there, he could survey the entire club, especially the people jostling for drinks right in front of him. And he was within leaping distance to their target, if things went badly, although Noma had already assured him they wouldn't. When she saw that Shigidi was in place, Noma advanced on their target. He was talking to a young girl with glistening skin and short dreadlocks, who wore a black miniskirt and white crop top. She'd come to the bar to buy a drink, but had apparently been distracted by the blonde stranger who, Noma could see, was offering to pay for her drink. Noma stood just a half step behind him, amusing herself with their clumsy, flirtatious conversation, as they took turns shouting into each other's ears. When a thick-necked and even more thickly bearded bartender placed two glasses in front of the couple, Noma saw her chance. In one smooth move, perfectly timed, she slid her hand into the space between the man and the girl, took one of their newly delivered glasses of whiskey, and downed it in one gulp.
"Hey!"
Surprised, they both turned to look at her, and she stared right back at the young girl, a fierce glare above her smiling mouth. She couldn't have been more than 20, maybe 21. Noma snarled. The girl wilted, snatched the other drink, and squeezed her way away from them, scurrying back to her friends. Noma turned to the man she hadn't seen in 70 years.
"Alistair Crowley, the great beast, 666. Or should I call you Alex Black now?"
"Noma!" He looked shocked. "Live and in the flesh that you lust after so deeply." She brushed a strand of loose hair behind her ear.
"How are you, Alex? That is the name you go by these days, isn't it?"
"Oh, wow, it really is you," Alistair exclaimed.
"Yes, it is.
So how are you, Alex?" He blushed visibly.
"You know, you don't have to call me that, love."
"Oh, don't I? I saw you on the cover of Teen Now or 17 or some other children's magazine that kept fawning all over the sexy, brooding lead singer of Britain's hottest up-and-coming rock band. What is it called? Equinox?" She threw her head back and laughed.
"Yes, Equinox, right, yeah. It's just a cover."
"Yes, I know, and it's not a very good one. Couldn't you find something less cringy? And you know what else? I don't like your new name, Alex. It's a silly name. So, Alistair, what's a nice young 100-year-old white boy like you doing in an African den of sin like this?" She looked around the room. "Have you finally fully embraced the desires that you so pitifully tried to hide from yourself and your racist friends back in the day?" He shook his head, immediately defensive. "That was a long time ago, love. I'm a different man now. You helped see to that. The times have changed, and so have I."
"I can see that. I thought I'd never see you again. Figured something had happened to you."
Noma laughed. "Don't be silly. Of course you were always going to see me again." She placed the bright red nail of her index finger against his neck. "You still owe me a favor. I always pay my debts, and I always collect what's owed to me. You should know that by now." Noma leaned in close to him so that her breath flowed against his neck. His own breathing became rapid and heavy. She found that she was enjoying the effect she had on him. It had been a while since anyone besides Shigidi had spontaneously desired her so intensely. She caught a glimpse of Shigidi watching from the end of the bar. His face was blank, but she could tell he was simmering, jealous. She pushed Alistair's knees apart and pressed closer. He shifted uncomfortably on the barstool. "Have you enjoyed the gifts I gave to you?" She lowered her voice, but was so close to him that it still carried over the noise of the club. "Have the lives you gained been full of pleasure?"
Yes,
they have," he replied, blinking rapidly, as though he was trying to recall all that had happened since he last saw her, loading up memories like film. "The first got me all the way from the 50s to the 90s. Wild times, truly special. I kept wondering where you were. You probably enjoyed every minute of those years."
I was in Lagos mostly. San Francisco occasionally, Cairo once or twice, she said. And yes, I did enjoy it. Mostly, anyway. Now, I'm on my second of the lives you gave me, and it's all a bit of the same, but more. You know, new music, more sex, different drugs, wilder parties, new tech. Signs and wonders, babe. You know how it is. But none like the pleasure we shared that night in the desert, that first time. He looked into her eyes, and she returned his gaze with a steel smile. You know, I've always wondered why, he continued. Why did you choose me that night and not Victor or some other traveller? Why did you come back for me all those years later? I've had a couple of lifetimes to think about it, but I've never really come to a conclusion. He paused, and then he asked, Am I special to you in some way? Have any other men received these wonderful gifts? His voice had thinned out into a rasp. Numa's smile folded back into itself as she pursed her lips and leaned in even closer until they nearly touched his ear. And then she said, No. No other men. Only gods. She felt him tremble with a familiar excitement, and then she pulled back like a whip. But don't get it twisted. That doesn't make you special to me, darling. Just interesting. And potentially useful. The blood drained from Alistair's face, and his shoulders sank. Numa knew then that she still held sway over him, completely and truly. She didn't even need to use her power to manipulate his desires anymore. Speaking of being useful, do you still have friends in Third Dawn? She asked before he could recompose himself. Alistair nodded in time with the music. Good, very good. She slid her long, delicate finger up Alistair's inner thigh, leaned in and whispered, To be honest, over the years I had imagined so many things you could do for me to pay your debt. But I never expected that it would be what I'm about to ask now. Ask anything. I'll do anything for you, he said. He sounded so eager, Numa wasn't sure which he wanted more, to be with her again and re-experience the heights of pleasure, or another stolen spirit to extend his life. Oh, I know you will, Numa said. She took in a deep breath, enjoying the feeling of being so desperately desired, the sense of absolute power. The moment seemed to swell, making her feel light and weightless and liberated. There was something about it all converging, the music, the DJ, the crowd, the worshipful men before her, and Shigidi's jealousy behind her, that magnified it, refracting the moment into a thousand small memories of other, older moments in the beginning, just after the fall, when it had just been her and her sister together in the embryonic new world, in complete control of their own lives, unbound to anything except the temporary arrangements they made with the people and gods and spirit entities they chose without fear or thought for any other. And they had been so similar, almost always wanting the same thing, that there was hardly ever any disagreement between them. The world had been young then, when they'd been cast into it, young and pliable. They were free to satisfy themselves whenever they wanted to. Numa had been free to take souls and spirits wherever and whenever she wanted, free to do with them as she wished. Once, in a great rift valley, she'd even been worshipped as a kind of savage goddess, and later as a twin goddess with her sister in Sumer. She'd been a poet's muse. She'd been consort to a queen. She'd been so much and more, back when she was truly free. Long before the gods had resolved themselves into rigid spirit companies and created rules to manage the new artificial borders. Long before men had learned to manipulate spirit particles and made themselves dangerous to her kind. Long before her sister had made the wrong choice and become lost. Long before she'd become afraid. Long before she'd learned to negotiate her continued existence. She wasn't free to do as she pleased anymore. Not really, not without feeling like she was constantly in danger. She traded her independence and fear for partnership and security, but sometimes, in moments like this, when she remembered what it was like to be unbound, she wondered if the trade had been worth it. She grasped Alistair's thin hand and pulled him up to his feet. "Before we get down to business, let's just get down." He stared at her quizzically. "Dance with me, for old time's sake," she said, throwing a stone-faced Shigidi a look over her shoulder before turning away to the murky strobed depth of the dance floor. "Just like our last night together in Algiers," Alistair said, smiling faintly with what she recognized as a sliver of renewed hope. "Sure," she said, "just like Algiers." Alistair fished a £20 note from his wallet and put it on the counter. He stood there for a moment, like he was going to wait for his change. But she wasn't patient. She put her arm into the crook of his elbow and pulled him away and through the mass of bodies onto the dance floor. When they were near the center of the rhythmic chaos, she wrapped her arms around his neck and began to twist her hips to the tune of Mr. Easy's "Leg Over," pulsing through the speakers. His breath shortened, and she felt him slowly become turgid as she rubbed her hips against his groin. When he put his hands around the curve of her waist and pulled her in closer, she didn't resist. Nama emptied her mind and allowed herself to drift into a wheeling kaleidoscope of sweat, emotions, faces, perfumes, bodies, whispers, and desires, flowing in a current of the things she was so used to manipulating. There was no more thought of Oloru or Shongo or Murugan or the British Museum. There was only an intense sense of being. She felt Alistair's hands on her body, just one of the many sensations she was allowing to flow into her. She didn't know how long she remained in that state, but in the space between instants, she momentarily emerged from the clouds. Her head floated over the sea of shoulders, and her eyes made contact with Shigidi's across the room. She gave him a smile and held his gaze, enjoying the flavor that his jealousy added to the taste of sensations. He had watched for almost a minute when Shigidi finally stood up. The taste of the anger in him threatened to overwhelm the emotional cocktail of the room. She could see the stress-induced bulge in his lower jaw and a paleness in his knuckles that made her think his anger could burst through his hands in wild streaks of lightning. But he remained calm, closed his fists, and walked steadily across the dance floor toward her without breaking eye contact, his impressive bulk pushing merrymakers to the side like he was a bulldozer. When he reached them, Nama had a thin sheen of sweat on her forehead, a mischievous grin on her face. Alistair withdrew from her and stopped moving instantly, like he'd been frozen solid. "Who are you?" Alistair asked, barely audible above the heartbeat of the club. Shigidi ignored him and kept his eyes on Nama. "We need to go," he said, his voice loud and firm. "You found him and he's agreed, so enough of this."
"Enough of what?"
Nama asked, raising an eyebrow and regaining control of the emotional space.
"Enough of what?" Alistair echoed, standing confused and scared.
Shigidi turned to face Alistair, who took a step back, bumping into a group of gyrating girls. They glowered at him, but turned back to their dancing before he could begin to apologize.
"Enough time wasting. You agreed, yes?"
Alistair nodded.
"So, let's go. We don't have much time," Shigidi said, before wrapping his arm firmly around Noma's waist and turning to pull her toward the door.
She resisted him a bit, but not enough to make him believe she really wanted to. Shigidi spoke over his shoulder, almost shouting to Alistair over the booming bass,
"Follow us, now! And if you ever touch her like that again, I'll crush you into fine powder and feed your second-hand spirit to those filthy pigeons in Trafalgar Square. You understand?"
For the second time that night, Nama watched Alistair nod in time with the music to agree to something, even though she was sure he had no idea what was happening. But she knew that he was smart enough to recognize a powerful independent spirit entity when he saw one, so she wasn't surprised he didn't argue. Besides, she'd enjoyed the flavor of Shigidi's jealousy up to that point, but she needed to make a point. She was her own woman, and always would be. I'll let whoever I want to touch me, Shigidi. That isn't up to you. Do you understand? Shigidi looked at her with fire in his eyes. She could feel his hand shaking as though the effort of reining in his feelings was threatening to break him. But she'd had enough of men and gods judging or trying to control her for using and enjoying her power. She was not going to tolerate it from her partner. Shigidi, tell me you understand. He inhaled deeply, and when he finally answered, there was calm in his voice. Yes, I understand. Good, then let's go. They passed the table where the girl Alistair had tried to pick up earlier was now sitting and laughing with her friends. Noma looked back and caught Alistair hiding his face from them. The girl's exposed thigh gleamed in the light and was reflected in a dozen surfaces around the room as she pointed at him and the gaggle of girls erupted into giggles. Fuck! Alistair muttered under his breath as he awkwardly pressed down the tented front of his trousers. Poor Alistair. His night had definitely not gone the way he'd hoped. Not even a little bit. Noma almost felt guilty. Almost. They left the club through the dark corridor and past the hostess in the spandex dress, brushing past a steady trickle of new patrons, glossy young people talking and laughing. Outside, in the cool breeze and away from the noise, Alistair found his tongue again. Noma, please tell me, what's going on? She didn't answer his question, she just asked. Where is your car? Across the street, he said. Good, let's go. I'll tell you on the way. On the way where? Third Dawn, she replied. His face was suddenly suffused with a kind of dismayed confusion, but the threatening look on Shigidi's face convinced him not to ask any more questions, for now. Fine, Alistair said. They crossed the road and navigated their way along a stream of parked vehicles until they came to his car, a black SUV. Alistair opened the driver's side door, sat down and keyed the current address of the Anubis Urania Temple of the Hermetic Order of the Third Dawn into the GPS system. Shigidi sat in the front passenger seat, visibly maximizing his already high level of discomfort, while Noma slipped into the center of the back seat, smiling and enjoying her position as the subject of shared, if unbalanced, desire of both man and God. Alistair adjusted the rearview mirror and Noma caught the flash of confusion and expectation in his eyes. "This is my partner, Shigidi," she began, as Alistair started the engine and gently swung the car out onto the road. "He used to be a nightmare god back in Nigeria with the Orisha Spirit Company. We're freelance now, contractors if you like, and we need your help to retrieve something for an elder god with whom, you could say, we have become professionally entangled. And we need to get it tonight." Alistair shook his head. "Retrieve what? And what do you mean, professionally entangled?" Noma sighed. "It's a long story."